You're listening to The Leonard Lopate Show on AM 820 and 93.9 WNYC.
Industrial hygienist Manona Russell recently visited Amsterdam, where she was surprised to discover a growing discrepancy between regulations regarding a variety of environmental health issues in the European Union and the United States. And she joins me now to discuss her thoughts on the matter. Welcome back to our show.
Oh, thank you.
What were you doing in Amsterdam?
Well, my first job was to go through the Rijksmuseum's new laboratories, conservation laboratories. While other people may want to look at paintings, I like to see things that keep the artists alive. And so I was looking at fume hoods and flexible duct systems, all the things that make an industrial hygienist's heart glad. And then I did a training, the first one ever done this way, by a group called Conservation Nederland. And it's an interesting organization of about 600 top conservators from all around Holland, and they put this course together. We had 56 conservators from 13 different cultural institutions, a lot of private conservators, people from Spain, Belgium, France, Germany, and we taught occupational health and safety.
Well, but did you have to do any research? Because you were teaching this seminar in environmental health and safety in a different country. You know all the rules and regulations of the United States.
Yes, and I really had to work. I had to learn three different areas in particular. The first was the UN regulations through WHO and other organizations, which are spearheaded by the EU, by the way, to set up new material safety data sheets, which are those sheets that come from the manufacturer with technical information, set up a new labeling system, new warnings, everything. I had to learn all about that. Then I had to learn the EU regulations. And they fall into two groups, those that are absolutely mandatory for each country and those that the country can set up their own mechanisms for.
So the Netherlands have different rules in some areas than Germany or France?
Yes, they do. And then I had to look at the Dutch regulations. Their acronym for OSHA is ARBO, A-R-B-O, standing for words in Dutch that I will not go into here because I'll pronounce them wrong.
Well, they had the advantage, didn't they, when they created the EU, of being able to rethink everything and come up with at least some kind of uniform policy.
Oh, they did, and it is beautiful.
This is kind of like after the French Revolution, where they said, let's change everything, and they came up with the metric system.
Yeah, it's that revolutionary, too. I mean, I can hardly wait until it comes here, because it makes training easy. I would be able to train ordinary people in no time at all with this European system.
You said you can't wait until it comes here. Is it likely to come here?
It will have to.
Oh, because of the UN?
We're not going to have any choice. We can talk about our independence but the EU is a market of 450 million people. If we want to sell to them our labeling, our material safety data sheets, and our chemicals even, are going to have to be compliant.
Well, in this country, we have a number of agencies that deal with these various regulations, OSHA, CPSC, the EPA, the FDA, the DOT. Why so many different agencies?
It's unfortunate. And it just had to do with the way the regulations started. Each one started for a specific purpose. FDA got started because of food and drugs problems, so that's all they deal with. They only deal with those things. EPA really was primarily pesticides and some kinds of environmental concerns. OSHA only deals with workplace chemicals. The Consumer Product Safety only deals with consumer products. And so we have this all split up. But with this new system, there'll be one set of labels, terms, definitions across the board, and it'll make it a lot easier.
Is that where REACH comes in, registration, evaluation, authorization, and restriction of chemical substances?
And that's the one that's going to hit the U.S. like a ton of brick, and it's going to hit it in 2012. We don't have much time.
That's the rules and regulations affecting products that are sold in the EU?
Yes. So in order to sell a product in the EU, and realize it's not just the EU. A number of other countries have accepted the EU's standards, so it's a bigger market than just the EU. But in order to do this, you have to register the chemicals in your products. They've already registered 143,000 chemicals. If those chemicals are produced in amounts of 1 ton or so, you just have to register and have statements about them. But if they're produced in amounts of 10 tons, now you have to have a chemical statement about them. You have to list the tests that you've done and so on. And they are forcing testing of these chemicals.
There's 10 tons or over.
Yes.
But under that, it's considered not enough to really
Well, they would like to
testing?
Do it for all of them, but they're starting with the 10 tons because those are what are called high-volume production chemicals. And they've identified over 30,000 of them that manufacturers are going to have to provide basic tests for or they can't use them.
So this is going to hit American manufacturers like a 10-ton truck.
It is.
They also have a list of substances of very high concern, the SVHC. How do they determine what substances should be of very high concern?
It's really amazing. They sit down like civilized people and look at the risks and the exposures like normals and figure out which chemicals are really something that we need to work on.
Now, Monona, there's an implicit criticism there.
Yes.
You're suggesting we're not civilized
yeah.
people?
Well, we have a problem over here. And the problem is that there's another person always sitting at the table when anything is discussed, and that problem is industry and big business. So very often things don't get discussed if it's going to step on too many toes or too much profit.
Well, often the testing has been done by the manufacturers rather than by independent agencies. Who would be doing the testing in this instance?
The EU has test methods that are actually, they're like standard test methods, and they have to be done by a certified lab. So the tests will be uniform.
And what kinds of things would be included in this list of very high concern?
Oh, I was just thrilled to look at those chemicals because these are chemicals that I've been concerned about for many years, some of them. For instance, refractory ceramic fiber that you see in every school or in a kiln. And they use it in stained glass as a barrier and an insulation. It behaves in animals the same as asbestos. It looks like asbestos. It is essentially going to function that way. So they've put those on their list.
Does that mean they banned them or just simply said
There's
that
There's going to be
concern?
Restrictions. There is going to be restrictions and special testing for them. 5 phthalate plasticizers, which we have all been concerned about in this country finally. A number of art pigments, a number of the chrome art pigments, the lead chromates in particular. These are things that I know are a problem because they're not only used in art, they're used in printing, the printing industry, and in certain kinds of consumer paints as well.
My guess is Monona Russell, we're talking about the discrepancy between the regulations regarding environmental health issues in the European Union and the United States. You mentioned product labeling. Do they have a better system than we have here?
Yes, they have. First of all, they've set up all of the definitions so that they're clear-cut. The difference between a combustible and a flammable liquid is at 140 degrees, period, end of report. In this country, it depends on which agency you're talking about, which is flammable and which is combustible. So they've done that with everything. With the toxicity, they have a series of pictographs. Even if you don't speak the language, these pictographs are very clear, whether it's going to corrode your hand or whether it's a long-term hazard or a short-term hazard. It's all in the pictures. And the terminology is all simple.
What is the globally harmonized system of classification and labeling of chemicals, GHS for short?
That was devised by the UN, and it was spearheaded by the EU. They were one of the major players in setting that up, and they have accepted it within the EU.
Have any other countries adopted it? Is this something that's going to come up before the United States Congress?
Every single one of the agencies that we talked about, EPA, OSHA, CPSC, are looking at this. And OSHA has already published, I believe it was in last September, a proposal to switch our MSDSs to the globally harmonized system. And, of course, you immediately see industry having a hemorrhage and organizations like mine in industrial hygiene saying, wonderful. So.
There are also people in Congress who automatically react to this sort of thing as though it means the United States has to give up its independence.
Yeah, well, mazel tov. I hope they give up their independence because this system is definitely better.
What about MSDSs, material safety data sheets?
Well, there is the difference that is really going to make life easy for me.
What are they?
They have a whole series of toxicity tests that are supposed to be done. They're required for the 10-ton ones, but they're supposed to be done on all chemicals. And those are acute toxicity, the effect on the skin, serious eye damage if it gets in the eye, respiratory and skin sensitization, which is allergy, germ cell mutagenicity. In other words, can it affect DNA? We'd like to know because that tells us maybe it's a carcinogen, maybe it affects birth. Carcinogenicity, that's a 2-year animal test. Reproductive toxicity, a specific target organ damage, can it damage the liver, the kidneys, the brain? What can it do on both single exposure and on repeated long-time exposure and aspiration hazards.
And this would eliminate all those lawsuits over whether the asbestos or whatever the thing is that people are claiming destroyed their health actually did it or not.
Right. So when these there's going to be a blank on the tests for each of these, and if the tests have not been done, you see only one thing allowed, and that's no data available in that blank. So you can literally glance down the material safety data sheet and see if it's been studied or not.
There's a purple book. What's that?
Well, the purple book has all of the labeling and regulations for these in it. And that's if
anyone, can I get that?
Anybody. Just Google purple book GHS and you'll probably score a copy. And they'll give it to you in any language, and you can read. It's very long. It's got all of the data in it.
Now, you threw out a date before 2012. Is that when all these regulations go into effect, or are they being eased in right now?
No, most of the regulations I'm talking about are already in the EU, but the testing requirements for selling products in the EU, that test data is required to be available in 2012.
Are there some American companies who sell to European markets and these other markets who are already working on bringing their products into line with these standards?
Well, they don't discuss it, but I'm assuming some are. Some of them have a big market there. I'm sure that they're busy doing that. And I also am afraid that some of them are switching to substitutes.
Is this something that will only be done on a federal level or can also be done on a local level? I know there's a bill in New York City, Bill 58, which addresses some of this.
No, Bill 58, I would love to talk about. That's a bill that would stop me from testing my own air.
You can't. That's who's proposing that?
It started with Bloomberg, and he did it a year ago, and we got a number of us got together, and everybody, all the organizations, all the unions, we kind of stopped it, but it's come out again. It's got another life.
And why would they prevent you from testing your own air?
They say that if we test wrong and we give the wrong impression, that we could cause panic. And I don't think that could possibly happen, but they are going to actually have the police empowered to take your equipment and arrest you if you don't have the right permits and so on and so forth. And you have to get those ahead of time to test the environment if you fear that there's a radiological, chemical, or biological hazard.
By the same logic, we could arrest doctors who are suggesting we take flu shots, right?
Well, they made us exemptions for that. In fact, I'm exempt because I work for a union. But you see, when we looked at the bill and he said, okay, I'm exempt and you're exempt, but why should the homeowner not be exempt? Why should this person who knows something about chemistry not be? Why can't you test your own air, set up your own defense system? Who died and left them God? So, you know, we just really are against this bill, even though it will not damage my life personally. I want to speak for the people who may want to do other things.
We're going to take a little break, and when we come back, invite listener calls. Our number here is 212-433-9692. That's 212-433-WNYC. Or you can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. Please don't send me any emails because I really just am not capable of, I can't have enough of a split consciousness to be able to do everything. So I'm going to look at the comments on our show page and also at the calls that are coming in.
Okay.
Is that okay?
That sounds like
When you multitask too much, actually, you wind up not doing anything well.
I think they've proven that.
And in my case, I don't do anything well even without multitasking. Monona Russell is an industrial hygienist. We're talking about some of the rules and regulations that are now being implemented in the EU and through the UN, and we assume will eventually come to pass in this country as well. The number again, 212-433-9692. We're back with industrial hygienist Monona Russell and taking your calls at 212-433-9692. Let's go right to one of those calls. Tom from Seabright, New Jersey. Hi, you're on the air.
Hello. Thanks for taking my call. I'd like to ask your guest, is it true that a major difference between the EU and the U.S. is that before something can be put into the consumer products or the environment in the EU, the producer has to prove that it's safe, as opposed to the U.S., it's the burden is for somebody on the outside to show that it's unsafe? And if that's true, how does it make any sense in terms of protecting the U.S. citizens?
Well, you're right. That's their philosophy. The whole system is built on that philosophy that does not assume that because there's no data that the chemical is safe. And we do make that assumption. So they now say that you need to prove it for the 10-ton ones. They haven't got the ability yet to say that everything has to be tested because there are 143,000 chemicals already being used in the EU in commerce. So you cannot just suddenly stop everything. So they have switched over this burden of proof, put it back on the manufacturer where it belongs, and are they going to slowly increase the requirements for testing?
What about chemicals that are used in this country that go beyond that 143,000 that aren't being used in 10-ton quantities? We could have 50,000 more chemicals, couldn't we?
Try 50 million.
Uh-huh.
Because the Chemical Abstract Service registered last year its 50 millionth chemical, and they were registering them at the rate of 25 per minute. And they were not registering them from research papers. They were registering them from chemical catalogs and from patents. So those chemicals are out there with no testing. And the majority of the chemicals we use have never been tested for anything.
We thank you for your call. And we go now to Joan from Connecticut. Hi, Joan. You're on the air.
Hi. Thanks for answering my call. Would Monona, I know it's not probably a 10-ton problem, but would Monona be willing to comment some more on anything new about artists, pigments, colors, and printmakers?
You said
material?
Things with lead. What about all the cadmiums, the source of so many of our brightest colors?
Yeah, well, you see, you can't make art green. If things are going to last on the museum wall for 500 years, you're going to have to make them out of lead and cadmium and chrome and cobalt and so on. So those are called the inorganic pigments, and they are toxic. But we know how they're toxic. We know a lot about those. The ones we don't know much about are the inorganic ones. I mean, the organic ones, sorry, just reversed. The organic ones that are based on carbon. But many of them are in classes that we know are probably carcinogens, like the benzodiazepines, the anthraquinones, the benzimidazolones, and so on.
And where would they occur? What kinds of paints?
Alizarin crimson. The phthalo blues and greens, the darylite yellows. There have many, many pigments. And those, none of them have really had long-term testing at all.
So what does it mean for Joan? Does it mean Joan and all the other painters out there who use, and by the way, does it matter whether it's an oil-based paint or an acrylic?
No, it doesn't even matter if it's a pastel or a colored pencil. If it's sold as an archival art material, it's going to contain these same basic pigments.
And so what do you do, Joan?
You're asking me?
Yeah.
Well, I
bet you use Thalo Blue.
I would like to know a place, if possible, where you could actually look up anything new about the toxicity of these things, you know, and as you mentioned before, recurring use.
There's almost nothing new. If you want what's known, you could always email me because I have a list of about 250 pigments, and I keep track of what is known and what is not known.
How do they get in touch with you, Benona?
They can Google my name ACTSNYC@CS.com. And I already answer about 35 a day, so one or a few more from you people, I'll get by.
And Russell is spelled R-O-S-S-O-L.
Right.
It's not spelled the way Russell usually is spelled. And Monona, M-O-N-O-N-A. A listener in Brooklyn wonders about... in fact, her name is Lilia, flame retardants in mattresses that have been proven, she says, to cause SIDS in infants. Is that true?
Well, nothing's been proven to cause SIDS. There are a few things over time that have been associated with it, because you can't really prove. Obviously, we can't take children and kill them off and see what did it. So, you know, but if we see a lot of a certain chemical in an environment and we see a relationship with increasing the number of SIDS, then we might say there's a relationship. But the idea of it being the fire retardants is a little more tenuous. But it's an important point because that's one of the most interesting stories to illustrate what's wrong with the way we function here. You may remember PCBs, polychlorinated biphenyls, that were thought to be so terribly toxic. And they were used as fire retardants in many things back in the 50s and 60s. They were banned. And so what did industry do? They started taking the chlorines off and putting bromines on them. So now we have the brominated fire retardants. And there is no reason whatever to think that they're any better than the chlorinated polyhydrocarbons. So, I mean, we're not thinking. We're substituting chemicals without testing, assuming the untested chemicals are safe, and putting them out into the economy. So there very well may be a relationship between those fire retardants and SIDS.
My guest is Monona Russell, and we are talking about the current standards in this country involving environmental health issues, the ones that are being imposed by the European Union and soon by the United Nations as well. Our number here is 212-433-9692. You can leave a comment on our show page at WNYC.org. I'm Leonard Lopate. This is WNYC, WNYC.org. We are also going to be putting up a link to your website on our show page so people can connect to you that way. And we go now to Nina from Brooklyn. Hi, Nina. You're on the air.
Hi, it's Tina. I'm wondering, I live in an area that has lots of highways. It's got ships. It's got trucks coming in and out, the BQE. And our neighborhood is very concerned of the air quality and the water quality. And we've been trying to have it tested, but we're getting the runaround, and we don't know how to get our air, land, and water tested.
Yeah, I wish I could say that you could just make a call to the health department and that'll be taken care of, but it won't because they would be all over the place doing nothing but that. However, if you have a good group there and you can get together with your neighbors and do some testing, like there have been a couple of groups in Greenpoint who have had some testing done because of the problem with the oil spill under that area, that may be one way to get some of that done. There's also another thing you can do that is not terribly expensive, and that's have lead wipes done in your home, because one of the problems living near dusty areas and areas where there's industry is small amounts of lead getting into the dust in your home. And that is one thing that can be easily done by not terribly expensive testing by somebody who is an industrial hygienist.
Didn't hear it. Somebody who's an industrial what?
Industrial hygienist.
Okay. Now, we are a group. Who do we turn to have, as a group, to have this done?
I don't do this, but I know a lot of people. If you want to email me, I'll give you a few names and you can make up your own mind.
Thank you for your call. And we go now to Lee from Essex Falls, New Jersey. Hi, Lee. You're on the air.
Hi there. How are you?
We're well.
I really enjoy this program. What I wanted to ask about is I have two children, and I've been hearing a lot about plastics and serving food in plastics and drinks and things like that. Can you shed some light on that?
Yes. There's a whole series of problems there. There is the plastic itself. For instance, some of them contain bisphenol A, or they contain styrene if they're polystyrene, or they contain vinyl chloride if they're vinyl chloride polymer. And those are in small amounts usually because they're monomers that the plastic is made out of. And then there's all of the additives. There's no such thing as pure plastics. There's going to be plasticizers and antioxidants and all kinds of chemicals in there. The plasticizers in particular have been regulated even in this country now. A couple of years ago, there was a bill that actually forced our Consumer Product Safety Commission to ban some of them from children's toys and products. So plastic, you heat food in plastic, and you are, the higher the temperature the plastic is at, the more stuff is coming out of it. So it's probably better to find other things to heat the food in than plastic. And there's no way to know what all of those chemicals are.
Right. I don't heat food in plastic, but I'm thinking about plastic plates or plastic cups and things like that, and to, you know, to drink out of. I mean, is that...
If the contact is short, of course, the exposure is short. If the and the lower the temperature, the less the exposure. If you are, you know, some people really want to eliminate it, then you would use something else. But if the contact is really short, there's probably minimal
exposure. It's more often when we put something in the microwave, or we put it in the freezer in these plastics.
In freezer, or leave it in the fridge for days.
Because then they leach.
Yeah, they're slowly breaking down. They're slowly leaching out their stuff. It's the same thing when you get in your nice new car and you have new car smell. Those are the plasticizers coming out of the plastics in the car.
A listener in Brooklyn asks, is there a certification program that's trustworthy? The EPA is designed for the environment, Green Seal. Is there a European program with a website that's better?
Not yet, I must say. That should be coming, but right now green should be a red flag. As soon as you see that it's organic or it's green or it's special, you want to ask a lot of questions, because there's an awful lot of views on this. And I'm not saying these people are all crooks. What I am saying is sometimes they have the wrong idea about what is safe and what is best, and there's a lot we don't know. So don't jump on any bandwagons until the tires are pretty far down in the tread.
A listener in Hell's Kitchen wonders if there are problems caused by landlords spraying nearby apartments for roaches, and what are the dangers of reach bait products?
Reach bait.
That's what it says. Oh, roach bait.
Roach bait. There we go.
Roach bait.
Well, the roach bait is kind of nice because it stays pretty much put. It's also usually a hormone that affects the cockroaches. So they're not really terribly hazardous. But I spent the night in the car. My husband and I spent the night in the car because somebody set off a bomb in an apartment under ours. So, yeah, if people next to you are spraying, or worse yet, bombing, that can really get right through the cracks and crevices in our old New York buildings and make life pretty unpleasant.
One listener asks, does the Obama administration have a different attitude towards environmental health than the Bush administration did? How do you feel about Obama's picks for the heads of EPA, OSHA, and other agencies?
Well, of course, I can't believe he did such a good job of picking the heads of those agencies. Those people really actually know what a chemical is. They have good plans. Now, whether or not they're going to be able to go anywhere with it, I don't know, because industry here is very, very powerful. But the person who's the head of OSHA right now, David Michels, I've read a number of his recent speeches, and he really gets it. For example, with diacetyl, which is the butter compound that is now causing lung damage, permanent serious lung damage, he's smart enough to say, well, we don't want to ban just diacetyl. We want to ban everything that looks like diacetyl, because they're all going to do the same thing. So he gets the idea of chemical substitution and groups. So we've got good people at the heads of these agencies now.
Julie from Purchase, New York. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hi. I just had a follow-up question. What would you recommend to freeze things in instead of plastic and, refrigerate and freeze instead of plastic? What would you recommend?
You know, I really can't answer that, and I wish I could because I don't know what's in all of the things that they sell for this.
Well, for example, if you put something in a glass bowl,
if you put
then
it
you're
going
to put plastic wrap over it, aren't you?
If you do that, I have no problem.
Oh, that's okay? The plastic wrap is okay?
Yeah, if it's borosilicate glass and not lead glass, but lead glass is not common. But you need to know what the material is. But a lot of the things they sell, these freezer bags and things, I honestly don't know what their plasticizers and what their chemicals are.
So I guess I want to let Amy have the last word because this is the overarching question. Amy from Manhattan, you're on the air.
Hi. Ms. Russell, you said that we should question what's the ingredients that are called organic and natural, but what sources are there to look into that?
Yes. If you've looked into this, you know there are many different standards organizations that say what organic is, and there's many different definitions of it.
Is that, that's in this country. What about
in
Europe?
Country. In Europe, there isn't really, it's not a label anymore. I mean, it's still in the same position that we are here. They're still working on this. It's not clear exactly what is meant by that term, and it's not part of the GHS, the Globally Harmonized System.
So when can we expect to see real changes in this country?
Certainly I expect to see something by 2012. I expect to see probably globally harmonized MSDSs by that time.
Meanwhile, we have a year and a half. We just have to be careful.
We just have to be careful. And also, you can use the Internet, because if the product is being sold somewhere to Europe, you may be able to find another MSDS other than the one that is being created by the man who's selling it to you here.
We have put a link to your website on our website at WNYC.org, so people can connect with you quite easily. And my great thanks to you for being with us again. We've been talking with one of our favorite guests, the industrial hygienist, Manona Russell.
Well, thank you. It's been fun.